How did frogs become toxic? Although they were first documented scientifically in the late 1700s by the French biologist Georges Cuvier, brightly coloured poison dart frogs were known for centuries before this by native South Americans, who laced the tips of their blow darts with the animal's toxic skin secretions, hence the name. But are the colourful frogs the only toxic ones in the family, as is widely believed, or are their duller coloured brown cousins also capable of packing a chemical punch? That is what Rebecca Tarvin from the University of California at Berkeley has been looking into.
We are very interested in understanding how frogs become toxic. Most people have focused on brightly colored frogs and finding out how toxic they are, but very little focus had been put on the brown frogs. So we actually didn't know how frogs transition from brown to brightly colored and from non-toxic to toxic.
Where do the frogs come by their toxins?
Poison frogs and other animals that have this trait, they get their toxins from what they eat. Things like mites and ants and occasional beetles or fly larvae, things like that. And those arthropods have lots of different chemicals. Some of them you might call like a toxin bomb. Some of these mites are referred to that way. Ants also have a really broad diversity of compounds. Most of these toxins are not even studied. We don't actually know what the effect is on an animal and how toxic they are. They could just be distasteful, which is also useful, you know, to deter predators. You don't have to kill a predator to keep it from eating you.
I suppose there's a number of different problems to surmount then if the frogs want, in inverted commas, to do this, because not only have they got to not die from the toxin themselves, they've got to be able to separate it from the useful things they do want to digest and then put it somewhere in their body and then keep it there so that it's useful. That's a lot of evolutionary steps.
That's right. It's quite complicated, and actually we have very little understanding of how it happens aside from it does happen. So there's a couple of research groups, including my own, where we're really interested in trying to understand how exactly the toxin goes from even starting at the mouth or the stomach, how exactly it gets into the skin, because that's where it's present in really high concentrations.
And what, by studying the darker, uncolorful brown frogs and asking how are they different from the bright, colorful ones, despite being very closely related, you're hoping that there'll be some of those mechanisms disclosed?
Yes, that's right. So if you want to understand the evolution of any sort of trait like this, you need to kind of be able to compare animals that have that trait with animals that don't. And so that's where these brown frogs come in. We didn't previously know if they actually lacked this trait, because there's a sort of bias. People look in the wild and they see these brightly colored animals and they think, I wonder if that species is toxic. So they go and they collect a sample and show whether or not it has toxins. But people, not surprisingly, aren't as curious about the brown ones. So there was a huge oversight in the literature about what these animals were doing.
And are the brown ones toxic?
They do seem to have alkaloids, which are the compounds we find in the colorful frogs, at levels that are clearly measurable. In some cases, I would think it has an effect on their predators, but in a lot of cases, they have quite low levels. So it's something that's detectable, but not necessarily toxic towards predators, although we actually don't know that.
These brown frogs, then, they are a step towards becoming brightly colored, highly poison, colorful frogs, but not the whole hog. So have they got some of the right apparatus, but not all of it then, to move down that evolutionary path?
That's what we think. So before our study, there was an assumption that the main difference driving whether or not a frog was toxic was what they were eating. And that's because we know that they get their toxins from their food. They actually can't synthesize any of these toxins. And so people assume that, well, these toxic frogs, they must be eating a different diet. And in our study, we show that actually they eat a lot of the same arthropods, same mites and ants. And so it's not just diet that's driving this. There's something else different about the physiology of those accumulators, the sort of colorful species.
Apart from busting a myth that brown frogs are not taking on board some of these toxins and maintaining them, at least at a low level, what does this study add then? Where next with this?
the question we set out to answer was, how do frogs accumulate toxins? And in order to do this, we have to understand not just the brightly colored frogs that do accumulate toxins, but their close relatives that aren't as toxic or as colorful. And so what we're working on now is more direct tests of this, where we take a known quantity of an alkaloid and feed it to a colorful frog that we know sequesters it very well, and also feed it to a relative, a dull-colored frog that in the wild doesn't show as high of an ability to sequester the toxin. And then we can compare, you know, what happens to that toxin? Does it reach the skin? What quantity of the amount that we give them reaches the skin, and how does that differ? So we're starting to dig deeper into these mechanisms.
Rebecca Tarvin, who's studying the evolution of the bright colors and toxic disposition of poison dart frogs.